Welcome to FSHD Straight Talk, the podcast where we dive deep into living with FSHD. I'm your host, Tim Hollenbach, and I'm on the journey with you. Having FSHD, I understand the challenges it brings to patients and their families. We're in this together, and this podcast is a space where we swap stories, share advice, and talk to experts to get the latest news. There's plenty to say about living with FSH muscular dystrophy, so let's get straight to it. Welcome all to FSHD Straight Talk Podcast. I am your host, Tim Hollenbach, and thanks for joining us again for another episode. We have been on doing this, I guess, on air, I wanted to say, but we've been recording these episodes for quite a while. It's like 8 years or so. We've had great guests, great researchers on. We've had fundraising events that have been kind of helped funnel those through here, and some great history. And today we're going to talk a little bit about that with our guest, Jim Chin. He is the Chairman of the Board of Directors for FSHD Society. He's been with the society for quite a while. His son had FSHD, and so did his wife. He also has a daughter, which he talks about her and how maybe he believes she doesn't have it, and a grandson that he hopes doesn't. And that's part of what drives him to continue the work he's doing within the FSHD Society. He talks a lot about the then and the now and how he got there. And people like Mark Stone, who have been critical in that involvement, the volunteers. See, I met Jim at the Volunteer Leadership Summit, as they call it, in Chicago just this past end of January, early February. And it was great to meet him. I did a little bit of a speaking event. I was very flattered to be asked to do that. I had a blast. It was fun to meet all the people. I haven't been there since the first one. And then there I met Jim as well. And it turns out it was the first one he was at, as we talk about that too in this episode. But listen to what I believe is the main focus, or the tie-in, or more importantly, the common thread of what has built the FSHD Society. And that is, to me, the commitment, you know, the connection, the community, and the communication that happens throughout that. It is phenomenal to learn about it through Jim's voice and through his perspective. So I'm really excited to bring this episode to you. If you want to be a guest on the show, you can do that easily. Just email me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. The FSC Straight Talk podcast is really driven by you, the stories, the people within the community. Research is great. Want to hear that. Always will give you the up-to-date things that come through as they do. But this is really about how this disease affects us, affects our caregivers, family members. And we bring those people here to talk about coping with the disease, managing our lives regardless, and so on. And I think Jim talks about that as well, of how we can even get involved. And hopefully it motivates you to do so if you're a person that's maybe on the cusp but not sure. Also, please follow the show. Share the show anywhere you find podcasts. I know I find all mine on Spotify. We are there as well, along with like Google Podcasts and so forth. Find us. If you can review, great. If you can, you know, follow is fantastic. Sharing is the most important thing. Let people know about this podcast so that the people we have on here, when they share their stories, they can share it with as many people as possible. So without further ado, on with the episode with our conversation with Chairman of the Board of the FSHD Society, Jim Chin. Hi, everyone. I've got some exciting news for you from the FSHD community. If you've ever felt the unpredictability of FSHD, or wish there was more accurate research and information out there, and I know you have, then listen up. I'm thrilled to tell you about Better Life FSHD, a groundbreaking new research platform from the FSHD Society that's changing the game for those of us living with FSHD. Better Life is your one-stop hub for tracking symptoms, accessing personalized resources like articles and videos relevant to you. And the best part, as you take surveys and track your symptoms, you provide FSHD researchers with better data to understand this complex, understudied disease. And a better understanding can lead to faster treatments, something every one of us can get behind. So head over to betterlifefshd.org and join the study. It only takes a minute to get signed up. Together, we can change the future for everyone affected by FSHD. I've done this. It's a simple process. I challenge you to do the same. Again, that's betterlifefshd.org. Now let's get back to the show. As promised, we have this exceptional interview set up for you here with Jim Chin, or James Chin, as some might know him as, one of our board members, part of the FSHD Society. Welcome, Jim. Thanks for being a part of the show. I think this is your first time being on the podcast.
It is. Thank you. I appreciate you inviting me. And I'm anxious to tell everybody what's going on at the FSHD Society.
That's nice. In the business, Jim, we call that a teaser. That's perfect. Look at that. It's awesome. So first off, I mean, do you have FSHD, and what's your tie-in with FSHD?
Okay. I do not have FSHD. My wife had it. She was diagnosed in her mid-30s. Okay. And our son had it, and he was diagnosed between 10 and 12 years old.
Okay. Did your wife know, I mean, prior to your son being diagnosed then? Like, how was that timing?
Okay, so what happened was there was a school nurse, and her husband was an MDA neurologist.
Oh, wow.
And she observed my son, and she suggested to my son that she take Jimmy to our pediatrician, who happened to be taught at the University of Rochester. So the pediatrician talked with Barbara and Jimmy, and he asked Jimmy to do a few things like whistle, raise his arms, a couple of other things. And he diagnosed Jimmy as having FSHD right on the spot. And then he suggested that Jimmy leave the room, and he asked Barbara the same, diagnosed her on the spot. So she didn't know she had FSHD till she was in her mid-30s. And we didn't know that Jimmy had it until he was about 10 or 12. But he had, you know, he was living a normal life of a teen, you know, a young man. Mm-hmm. So we know he ran a little slower and he wasn't as well coordinated, but, you know, that was...
Right. So, I mean, everybody's different, right?
Right. So what happened was that at age 23, after graduating from college and working a little, Jimmy was engaged to be married. The engagement broke up. And unfortunately, between the FSHD and the engagement breakup, Jimmy took his own life.
Oh, my goodness.
So, our family worked through that. We have a daughter as well, who doesn't have it, as far as we know. And then in 2014, my wife passed away. She, 2016, my wife passed away. She had FSHD and COPD. So, and making a long story short, in about 2016, I guess it was, or 2006, I went to a FSH patient conference, and Dan Perez said that he needed some help. And so I volunteered to be a board member and was accepted. And I joined the board in January of 2007. So I've been on the board for my 18th year.
Wow. So you've been around the society and the community within FSHD for quite a long time.
Yeah, I have, and I've seen it grow so much. It's unbelievable. It's just unbelievable. When I joined, there were four people at the society. Wow. Five, if you include Dan's mom, five.
Holy cow. Volunteers and leaders. 20.
We have about 20. And it's not just all these people have a lot of work to do, and they're doing a whole lot of programs for patient advocacy and research and stuff like that. So we've grown a lot under the direction of the last almost 8 years of Mark Stone. And Mark has really helped us go from slow to jogging quickly.
Yeah, that he has. And he's a good motivator, right? I mean, Mark,
he's an excellent communicator. He knows about bringing drugs to the market. He's helped us, you know, communicate with like the FDA and the NIH and other international organizations. So the FSHD Society has gone from, you know, pretty much a lone ranger in the U.S., although there are other organizations that work on FSHD, but we've gone from a singular type of organization to an international type of organization. And we have organized research conferences all over the world. We have many, many countries involved in FSHD, and they look to us for leadership. And Mark and his team are providing that as we speak.
So the growth is substantial by numbers, for sure, from 4 to 20, not to mention all the volunteers that have been, you know, added into the fold to keep it going.
Right.
Talk about like the programs, like what kind of programs were there when you roughly first started to what's offered now for people in the community?
Well, to be honest with you, you know, we had, you know, which when I started, you know, if some patient or family member had a question, they would call, and Dan's mother would talk to them.
Yeah.
You know, so she really was our entire patient advocacy group, you know. Dan did a lot of work in terms of, you know, government and getting FSHD more involved with NIH and starting the Wellstone centers, which basically are five centers throughout the United States, which deal with FSHD. So it started out really small. And, you know, when I joined the society, it was, you know, we were still, if we got any checks, we were putting the checks together and bringing them to the bank. You know, nobody does that anymore. I mean, the phones weren't interconnected.
Yeah.
So if I called Dan, you know, somebody else couldn't answer the phone if he wasn't there. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, top of the line in terms of business management, but we were doing a lot of good work.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, we have a lot of different programs. We, you know, any person who has FSHD, who's been newly diagnosed, or someone who already knows they've been diagnosed, you know, needs to get in touch with this society, because we have a lot of different programs. We have a program called Better Life, which mm-hmm. allows people to input their data, which is maintains their confidentiality, but helps them to track their progress in terms of the disease. It helps them also get through and understand what clinical trials are going on, what they can get involved in, all the things that a person would need to know if mm-hmm. And we also have a program called Charity Navigator, which helps people to get essential services, research and other services. So, I mean, those are just a couple of the things that we do. We have a network of 33 chapters. 30 of them are in the United States, a couple in Canada. And mm-hmm. those chapters meet, some meet 3 or 4 times a year. They go over information that's available regarding the disease. They also work hard to raise money in terms of walking roles and stuff like that. They also are leaders in the community and develop network of people. And we have more than 5,000 people in our database, moving up closer to either 10,000. We had only a few hundred. So we really have expanded our scope in terms of patients and also in terms of researchers.
Talk about clearly, right? It is grown. Why do you think that is? Like, why is it grown? And it feels like quickly. I know you said that we've gone to like a very fast jogging pace now. At this point, it doesn't feel like it's been like a short amount of time for considering the growth that has happened with programs and people. What do you think has been fueling that?
Well, you know, about 8 years ago, you know, Dan Perez wasn't able to continue as president and CEO. So we realized that we had to get a new leader. And we put out a search, and we hired a search firm, and they came back with about 15 different candidates. And I led that committee, and our committee eventually netted it down to 3 individuals, and we ended up hiring Mark Stone. And so the reason for this growth is really due to Mark's leadership. He came in right away, and what he said is, you know, we need to expand our scope. We need to bring in a lot more people. We need to get a lot more raving fans. And so with that, we embarked upon a chapter development program. So we have chapters in, as I say, 33 different communities throughout the U.S. Of the 33, 2 are in Canada. And so these committees, these chapters, they meet, they expand, they bring people into who have FSH and are interested in FSH. And before you know it, we have a lot more people aware of what we're doing. In addition, we run, you know, lots and lots of walk and rolls. And the walk and rolls are very well attended. And, you know, we had basically, you know, people from just about thousands of people attend these walk and rolls. And each year we raise anywhere from $1 million to $1.3 million in terms of just donations. But it's more than donations. It's more that, you know, it's the ability of people to see other people who have FSHD, who can interact with them. And, you know, also we promote our patient conferences, which are held every 2 years in the city in the U.S. And those patient conferences are very, very important. And they bring in people. And I tell people, you know, on Facebook or whatever, if they're new to FSH, they need to go to a patient conference because they will meet a lot of people just like themselves who have that disease and who are struggling the way they are, and they can get a lot of information as opposed to just being alone and not knowing what's going on. So the society is truly a patient advocate. And because of that, I think it's grown exponentially over these past 8 years. So, again, I think that's all due to, you know, we have clinical trial networks, which are places all over the United States where we have 33 countries involved. We have in these clinical trial networks, you know, it makes it easy for people to go if they want to be part of a clinical trial. Yeah. So, you know, and all of this information is coordinated so that all the researchers are doing the same tests and getting the same information. And so all of these things are just, if you add them all up, a better life, which helps people with their health platform and also, as I said, a charity navigator. And then, you know, Charity Navigator is a way for people to get information. You know, if they have issues about their disease and want some idea or a referral or a method of in of exercise or whatever, we have your broadcasts, which are very important to us. We also have our videos, which are available. So I think all of these things together, cumulatively, have helped us grow a great deal.
It seems like the common thread with all that growth is, you know, community connection, communicating with each other. Hence, it's kind of grown that community. When I first was diagnosed, I think it was similar to, I'm sure, as your wife and son when they were diagnosed. Like, is there anybody else that even has this? How do you find them? And I think people search or need that connection at some point. Some don't do that immediately. Some do. And then, but it feels like at some point, everyone does at some point of their FSHD journey.
No question about it. And when you first find out about it, a lot of doctors don't know about it.
Right.
So even the, you know, your primary physician doesn't know about it. I met a doctor the other day who's a neurosurgeon. And I asked him if he knew about FSHD. And he said he didn't.
Oh my gosh. A neurosurgeon, you said?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and he's a really top guy in his field, but he didn't know about the disease. So, you know, there's a whole lot of things. For example, last week, you know, FSHD did a little video on the conversation about getting anesthesia for FSHD patients.
Now, yeah, all that.
A lot of, you know, I mean, that's an important thing for people who have FSHD. So these are the kind of information you need, and it's available, but you have to go to the source to get it, you know? And
right.
And that's why the website is a good place to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It has everything you need, a one-stop shop for like the calendar. I think I visit that constantly. What's going on? What's happening? There's a Better Life login. That has a huge push lately. And of course, the fundraising events that roll out. When we have those fundraising events, you know, there are, you know, a huge chunk here, you know, of the finances are going to research, as far as I understand, like something we're near like 80%. Is that accurate, do you think?
We just put out a chart. Research and patient programs is 79%.
79%, yeah.
And then community engagement is 12%. And then administrative is 9%.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the money goes to research or patient programs.
Mm-hmm.
And patient programs are things that help our patients for example, we have all these chapters. You know, we have people who are not volunteers who help administer them,
yep,
and organize them. The patient, the chapter leaders are all volunteers.
Yeah,
we have probably about 150 volunteers.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
That need direction. You know, we have. You know, we work with organizations throughout the world, and you know, there's 33 countries that have FSHD chapters, and so we work with them to help them and coordinate. So we're trying to get everybody coordinated so that we're working, and not over, you know, not duplicating our efforts and moving this forward. So right now there's approximately about 400 people who are actively scientifically working on the disease. When I joined the society, Dan would say, you know, there were probably only a handful of research papers that were written every year. So now we go from
wow. Right.
You know, that's a few research papers to this inordinate amount of people working to solve FSHD. So it's we're moving in the right direction. One of the things that Mark has done is he's contacted the NIH and the FDA, and especially the NIH, and we have had meetings with them to show them with our patients, you know, what their issues are, so mm-hmm. that when we do get this treatment, the NIH will understand what markers are important in terms of showing the efficacy of a particular treatment. So we're working at way ahead. We're not waiting until we get something and then going to the government. We're trying to educate them as we move along. Mm-hmm. We've had at least two or three meetings just with that. We've also been down to Washington, talked to some members of Congress. And so we're trying to touch all the bases, really, to get us a treatment and a cure. And the long, you know, we don't want it to take a long time. We were hoping to have something this year. I don't think it's going to happen this year, but we have one trial that's in the second phase and one that's just begun in the first phase. So we did have Fulcrum, but they pulled that if while they were in the third phase. Fulcrum is giving us access to all the data that they collected. And we're going to be able to share that with the research community so that they can use that data to build upon what's been done by Fulcrum.
Yeah, it's correct. And it's not that it failed where it was meaningless. I think they're doing everything they can that whatever research, right, that it was there was some meaning in it. I know we all were hopeful that something would come of it. And wrapping our heads around the fact that that's not the case is difficult, but it's promising when you have something in phase two, right? There are other things down the pipeline. And in comparison to when you started with the society, that alone must be amazing to see that difference.
Hey, we didn't even know what DUX4 was. I would say until I was in the fifth to sixth year of my membership. So we began to understand DUX4, and from there, then companies got interested in trying to alleviate the manifestation of DUX4.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and I met at face-to-face at the leadership conference that FSHD Society puts together in Chicago. And I always laugh in Chicago in like late January, early February, which I find interesting, being someone from the Midwest, Wisconsin area, that we all gather in one of the coldest areas of the country during that time. But hey, it's a good place to do it. It has its pluses for sure. And when I first attended that, it was 7 years prior. It was just the first one. And there was maybe a handful of people in there, a lot more chapter driven. How are we building walk-in roles? It was that kind of conversation. When I was there, now fast forward to 7 years later, the whole feeling, energy of that meeting was completely different. I mean, there was still a lot of education in there, but it felt more robust. There was more things about, it wasn't just, okay, this is how you build a walk-in role. This is how you do a fundraising event. No. It was beyond that. This is what the FSHD Society is doing. And this is how, as leaders, volunteer leaders, you can help by doing this. So it feels like you were talking a lot about the then and nows. You know, did you go to any of the earlier volunteer summit meetings prior to that one that I met you at?
No, I didn't. But I have been at just about every patient meeting.
Yeah.
Patient conference. I've also been, I went to Europe for an international meeting. So I have participated in understanding and excuse me, and the work and the excitement that goes on with these meetings. I wanted to go to the volunteer meeting the first or second year that it was held, and for some reason I didn't. And then coming up this year, I said, you know what? These folks are doing such a great job. I think it would be good if the chairman of the board went out there and said hello. Now, I usually, when they have a walk and roll or whatever events going on, I usually send an email, you know, congratulating them on their efforts. But I wanted to do it in person this time and just add some ability of them to understand that the board of directors really supports their work.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it was great to see you there. And I know you've done so much in the meetings you're talking about, like the patient meetings. Now, do they call those like the patient connect? Like when they had it in December, right? Yes, we're talking about the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are
phenomenal.
Year, we have an international conference this year in Europe. And next year we'll have another patient connect.
Mm-hmm. Do you know where that one's going to be held, Jim, by chance? I don't.
you know what? It was mentioned, and I'm not sure. I'd rather not say because I
know. Right?
But in any event, you know, we also provide some scholarship assistance for people who can't afford to travel there. And that's been helpful for a number of people. I think at least 30 people received scholarships last year to go to that. So if a person can't afford it, there's still a way that they can get there and experience the depth and the camaraderie and the understanding and the science of what we were all working on.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. I mean, it's the patient connects, you're right. If you can make it, do it. If finances are an issue, you're right. There are resources to help you get there. I think it's like a must go to event at least once if you can.
I think so. I honestly think so. And also people can participate remotely.
Yes.
It's not the same, but at least there's a possibility of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So if anyone is diagnosed with FSH, they definitely should go to a patient conference. I mean, really, because, you know, you think you're all alone. Then you walk into this room and it's 200 other people who have the same issues you do.
Right.
Maybe not at the same level, but everybody's concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I mention that, you know, we have a board of directors. And there's 19 members on the board. We have two openings. We're allowed to do 21. Of the 19, 17 either have the disease or their family members have it. So that's incredible. These people work really hard. This is not a board that goes to a meeting four times a year, sits around a table, then goes home. They're involved in committees. They're working on aspects of helping patients and developing cures and research. And so the board is very committed. They want to have a cure as fast as anybody for themselves and their families. And so we're not a laissez-faire board. We're out there. We're doing it. Each board member is on at least two committees, and that's a big difference from many years ago when I first joined. There weren't very many committees, and we've expanded and developed and found a need for more assistance in many areas. So people should know that there's a whole lot of people supporting them. And as I said, at least 400 people in research alone doing this work. And then everybody behind the scenes.
Now, the fact too, Jim, that you're still involved as heavily as you are, you talked about all the traveling you've done, the meetings you've attended. you're part of a board that is more roll up your sleeves type, let's get into it, than, as you mentioned, just kind of waiting and watching. But the fact that you're still that involved, you know, your son had it, your wife had it, they have now passed, but you are still pushing on and you're still heavily involved. What continues to drive you to continue to do what you're doing?
Well, I think, honestly, I mean, you know, I don't want other families to experience what my wife and I did.
Yeah.
I have a grandson. I don't know if he has it or doesn't have it.
Right.
I certainly hope he doesn't have it, because my daughter doesn't have it, but I don't know. But
right.
In any event, it's just something that has to be solved.
Yeah.
And I really want to be part of that. And I've worked toward that, and I'm not going to do this forever, but I do think that I have one or two more years, and then I'll pass the baton, because I've been chairman for 5 years, and I followed Bill Lewis Sr., who was a noted neurosurgeon and whose family was inundated with this disease terribly. So, you know, I have a strong mentor and a person who I looked up to follow. And so, and every organization at some point needs to have, you know, new ideas and new blood.
Sure.
But I've loved doing this, and I hope that during my term we will find that treatment and a cure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that would be really gratifying.
That'd be fantastic. Yeah, we all hope so too. Now, when you and I met in Chicago, one of the first things you said to me was about baseball. You're a baseball fan. You know the game. And it's been driving me nuts. I know these questions have been fantastic. I love all the answers and the conversation we've had so far. But my God, man, you have a Jackie Robinson uniform behind you. Like, you got to tell me the story. How is that in your possession? Because that looks authentic.
Well, it is. What happened was, I was invited to a golf outing in New Jersey, and it was for the benefit of the Jackie Robinson Foundation. And by the way, Yogi Berra was at that, because his club, you know, his country club. So I went out there with a couple of friends, and we played golf. And after golf, everybody showers and changes clothes to go to dinner. And I'm walking into the shower naked, and out walks Yogi Berra naked. And I said, "Yogi, where's your pinstripes?" He looked at me and smiled.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So at the dinner, you know, they had lots of auction items and things that you could purchase. And I ended up purchasing that jersey, which his wife signed, because he passed away many years ago.
Yeah.
But obviously, he was a great player. And I think he was out at home plate when he tried to
stop it. No, he wasn't.
Yogi says he would.
I bet he does. I bet he does say that. Did your love of that of baseball start?
Well, when I was a boy, I lived on the Lower East Side of Manhattan in a housing project. And I got the benefit of going to camp with organization called the Children's Aid Society. And it was, I think, a 1 or 2 week camp. And anyway, they decided they were going to have a softball game. So there were tryouts. And when I went to bat, they didn't throw anything that I could possibly hit. And so I didn't make the team.
Yeah.
And I was devastated.
Yeah.
And I said, "I'm going to show those people I'm a good player." I went home and I played ball.
Yeah.
And not too months later, I won MVP of the CYO League. And I played baseball. I played high school. I played Sandlot. My team played in 5 different leagues in the summer, more than 60 games. So
holy
in the
cow.
This season, I probably played about 80, 85 games.
Holy cow. That's
right?
a lot.
As a boy, as a teenager. And I just got a love for baseball.
Yeah.
And later, I came to have children, and I coached my children. And then later, when they were too old to be playing anymore, I coached other children.
Oh, fantastic.
And that was fun, but it took up a lot of time.
Yeah.
And then finally, I said, I still want to do this. But so I got certified as a baseball umpire. And then I was able to go to the game, umpire the game, start and end, and then go home. I didn't have to drop off any kids at their house. I didn't have to pick up any kids for practice. Any of that.
Just show up to the game and leave. Yeah.
And I got paid for it. Not that I needed the money, you know, and my car was the best car in the whole parking lot. But I got paid for it.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of fun. I did that for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years until the parents got to me. And the coaches weren't that much better, because a lot of them really didn't know the rules.
Right.
And as an umpire, sometimes you have to teach the players the rules, and that's not always popular.
Yeah, no one loves rules, especially if they go against what they just did.
I know.
Nobody
tried to kill the ump, but you know, I was a little worried there.
I don't know. Now these days, when everything is on, you know, someone's phone or being shot by video, and there's nowhere to hide. So the bad behavior, yes, by parents, by coaches. So if you're listening out there, stop doing that stuff. Just, we need umpires. We need them to stay in the game.
Well, really
the same problem here.
Parents need to treat them right, because
yes, absolutely.
The kids are not going to have the ability to have a well-refereed game, So, but I watch a lot of Yankee games. I get Major League Baseball, and so I watch a lot of games. I'm still a big baseball fan. And in I live in Jenks, Oklahoma, which is about a 4-hour drive to Kansas City.
Okay.
So every now and then, if the Yankees are playing in Kansas City, you know, I try to get up there, see a game. And Kansas City is an incredibly friendly place for people who need assistance. You know,
that's good to know. Yeah,
it is really. I mean, one time I went up there, and I was having trouble walking. I had a walking stick, and I asked one of the attendants who were outside how to get to a certain gate, and he said, "No problem." He waved to this lady who had a golf cart.
Yeah.
The lady took me and my wife in the golf cart right to the gate that I was supposed to be at. She waved to a guy. The guy comes out with a wheelchair, wheels me upstairs to
eat. Yeah.
And then later during the game comes by, sees how we're doing. And then after the game comes by, picks me up, brings me to live with the golf cart.
Holy cow.
Drives me to the door.
Full service.
Of my car. So it's a great place. If you have FSHD or any inability, those people are really very, very hospitable.
So is that the Royals then? The Royals says?
Yeah,
I got a soft spot for the Royals, yeah.
So I go up and try to see the Yankees play.
That's awesome. Okay. Well, you know, the Yankees, I think now they go almost everywhere. I mean, everybody plays everybody. I think we had the Yankees here in Milwaukee not that long ago. I think just this last year. They travel well. Yankee fans travel well. There's no doubt. You guys are everywhere, if it appears.
I think that I think I read a couple of years ago that the Yankees have the most fans throughout the country.
Oh, I believe it.
Because of their history.
Yeah.
I live in Oklahoma, and there's at least 5 baseball players who came from Oklahoma who played for the Yankees.
Oh, wow.
So
I didn't know
Oklahoma is like Mickey Mantle is the big guy. know, so baseball is as popular here, and the Yankees are as well. But baseball, just in general, I just love baseball.
And I'm so glad that we talked about it, because, yeah, when we met in Chicago, knowing that you were a baseball fan, now seeing the room that you're sitting in is littered with some great baseball pictures, I'm sure memorabilia in there. What's your favorite memorabilia you have, baseball-wise? What's your favorite piece?
Oh, of what's on the wall?
Anything you got, yeah.
Yeah, let me just look at that. Oh, there's a couple of players from the Yankees I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
One is, of course, Mariano Rivera, and I have a picture of him. And Brett Gardner is another. Certainly, Derek Jeter. And then you have the four great Yankee players, you know, who came up together, you know, the catcher, Posada.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And
Jorge.
Bernie and Jeter. And that's very important to me. You know, I have a Mickey Mantle, Ted Williams photo, which, I mean, two great players.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Williams was awesome. Mickey Mantle, you know, he averaged over 300 batting average during his career. Then I have Yogi Berra and Don Larsen. And that, I think, was one of the most spectacular games I ever saw. I mean, I was a young boy at the time, but Don Larsen pitched a no-hitter.
Yeah.
That's, series.
Wow.
Yeah, so
see that live, man, it was amazing.
Actually, it was more than a no-hitter. It was a perfect game.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's ever done that before.
Mm.
Or since.
Yeah.
So I liked it more. I mean, I just, you know, have a love for all of them, and I don't have too much more room.
A bigger wall. Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much tapped out on that. Unless I have to build a bigger house.
So before I let you go, I wanted to ask one more question, and that I've asked it of many guests that have come here, and especially for yourself being, you know, chairman of the board of directors for FSHD Society, it reflects me, you know, right into the core of getting involved. So if there's someone that is just thinking about it, they're not sure, maybe they're apprehensive to get involved with the FSHD Society, maybe even have an idea of a different community group that they would like to even start, what kind of motivational words would you have to give them to kind of push them into the edge of jump in?
Well, I think that if they consider the fact that they want to have a treatment and a cure for this disease, and I think if they think about, they can just sit on the sidelines and do nothing or get involved. And so people who really want to do something about it, they need to get involved. And there's a lot of different ways to get involved. There's ways in which you can join a local chapter and help out and be a member of a local chapter. You can contact the FSHD Society for information about attending meetings and research conferences and stuff like that. There's obviously the need. I mean, without money, we can't operate.
Mm-hmm.
So money, donations are the lifeblood of our community.
Truth.
Our budget this year is nearly $6 million. And so, you know, it's really important that we raise this money. So aside from fundraising, there's, you know, counseling of other patients, you know, peer-to-peer counseling is very important. So there's a lot of opportunities. And basically, you know, the Charity Navigator is a place to go at the society, because they can then be directed to something that suits their interests and needs. And if they have a particular expertise, I mean, you know, we have two board openings that, you know, I mean, our board is incredibly talented people. And as I said, most of them are afflicted. We have people who are experts in, for example, you know, we just brought on four new board members. And these board members, you know, one of them has expertise in making sure of the legal aspects to getting these drugs approved in all the states. If and when we get a treatment, that has to be Medicare.
Right.
Medicare has to approve it in all the states. That takes work. That takes knowledge. You know, we have people who worked on bringing these drugs, pricing these drugs. We have people who are researchers on the board. We have people who are business people. So we have a lot of different talent. And again, if you're really interested in working, you know, join one of our committees. And then from there, perhaps you can be invited to be on the board or join the chapter and go from there, because all the chapters need additional members. And you'll get a lot out of it. You'll get a lot of knowledge. You'll meet some friends, and it'll add to your life.
Mm-hmm. As it seems like it has done for yours too. Fulfilling.
Well, I work with our friends of mine now, and I would have never known them over the years if I hadn't worked with them. And you know, I have a lot of respect for them.
Well, thanks, Jim, for joining us today on this episode. It was fantastic. I'm sorry it took so long to get you in here. Shame on me.
Anytime. You know, I am retired, so you get stuck one day.
Then we might just have baseball stories only. I don't know. We can work on that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks again, Jim.
Thanks.
We'll talk to you soon. Yep.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Oh man, that was fantastic. Selfishly, the baseball stories were my favorite part, but I also enjoy the stories of the then and the now. I mean, I didn't know where the conversation was going to go, to be quite honest with you. Jim has such a robust background with the FSHD society and the community, and then meeting him for the first time in Chicago, it was great. And you know, he had a scooter. He wheeled right over to my chair and said, "You know, I'm glad you're here." And I think it was right after I did a little bit of a speaking thing that I did there. That was really flattered to do. And he had kind words for me, and you know, handed me his card. And I'm like, I gotta have this guy on the podcast. And why haven't I yet? look how long he's been involved. So to me, it was definitely a box that had to be checked to meet, talk, and share some time with Jim and see where this FSHD society has come from and where it is now. The hope for the future with things being in phase two right now is just great. My biggest takeaway, I think, is what I mentioned to him within the conversation. I kept seeing within his storytelling of the FSHD society that, and its growth, is that it's really about connection, community, and then communicating within the community to build it stronger, to bring more people in. He talked about people with talents that come to the table on the board or in chapter meetings or in committees, helping fundraising groups to help generate the funds they need to, so that near 80% of that funds goes to research and patient programs is huge. You know, FSHD has the highest rating for a nonprofit organization. Those that don't know that is very difficult to obtain, and they've consistently have held that. Jim being the chairman of the board, it speaks to that leadership. It speaks also, as he spoke so admirably, about Mark Stone and his involvement. It's been about 8 years and the push that has come because of that man's motivation for our community as well. And I've had Mark on the episodes. I implore you to listen to those past episodes. And I was also kicked off events for us here when we do those virtual. And I just think that we have a great history of growth in the FSHD society. I also believe that we need more people to get involved. Generations, right? Younger coming in. I know we have early onset group. I think those are the generations that are going to keep feeding this thing. Hopefully we won't have to go that far, because we'll have a treatment and a cure. So the whole thing honestly gets shut down and maybe it turns into something different. But the point is, look at the traction, progress that this has created in really a short time when you think about it in that scope. It's been amazing. And that's why I think where we are now, and we are in a good place. And I'm excited to see what not this year necessarily has to bring, but also 26. And maybe we'll be all working on our treatment plan at that point. So it's just phenomenal. So if you want to be a part of the show, I'd love to have you be on as a guest. I've reached out to other people, searching the community far and wide here for the FSHD Straight Talk program. That's what this is about. People in the community. Email me. That's the best way to get a hold of me, fshdradio@fshdsociety.org. Reach out. You can also find me on social media, you know, Facebook, Twitter. I'm all out there. Just search my name. You'll find me. Feel free to direct message me there, DM me, drop me a DM, as they say. Let's connect. I want to be a part of that. And if you want to join the conversation, I'm also part of the FSHD groups out there and social media too, especially the Facebook app and Facebook world. And I have reached out to people through that community as well. So don't be surprised if you share a story on there, and I might just send you a message asking if you'd like to share that as well here on the podcast. So thanks again for joining us. Hope you enjoyed this episode with our chairman of the board of directors, Jim Chin. It's been a phenomenal episode. A lot of takeaways here, and I hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time on the FSHD Straight Talk podcast. Thanks for listening.